The Takeaway is supported by TechServe, offering backup solutions that help protect digital data in home or at work, and offering data recovery services for damaged hard drives or lost files. More info at techserve.com.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And could we possibly give presidential candidate Hillary Clinton a real question to answer?
Are you in a place to tell your male colleagues to go f*** themselves?
And have you ever?
Yes, I have.
Ooh, but tell me more. Tell me more.
But I've encountered those kinds of situations over the years. And, you know, sometimes you just have to ignore what's happening because there's a larger issue you're trying to deal with. And sometimes you have to confront it, and it's almost a snap decision.
Now, I'd watch that exchange between Hillary Clinton and podcasters Tracy Clayton and Heben Negatu from Another Round, the New York-based top 100 podcast from BuzzFeed, which covers everything from race, gender, and pop culture to, their words, squirrels, mangoes, and bad jokes all in one boozy show. And they're serious.
Well, before we get started, we saved you some bourbon. We don't know if you'll partake.
But I've got so much still to do. If this were the last event of my day, I would take you up on it.
Okay, well, rain check
next
then.
Okay, rain check.
But don't be fooled. This isn't The View with teased out hair, hip-hop lingo, and jokes about Rihanna sightings. This is serious talk about race. And they got into it with Hillary Clinton in a way she would never even think of allowing to happen on, for instance, this public radio show. But with Tracy and Heben, it's open season.
I guess I'm curious more generally, what do you think it would take for other white people to see the problems that we see?
Oh, I think a lot do. I mean,
I think the frustration of that interaction was not that the policy wasn't right. We can talk about policy, but that, like, on a basic level, people feel like they're not being heard. Like, Black Lives Matter is a pretty simple plea.
Right, right. It is. But if it's going to be a movement and not just a plea, then it has to build on making changes that people either have to accept or they have to embrace.
Presidential candidate Hillary Clinton speaking there with Tracy Clayton and Heben Negatu, hosts of Another Round, as I said, the most popular podcast from BuzzFeed. They're here with us. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
So do you think you got Hillary Clinton sort of off guard in this encounter with her? What was her demeanor in your opinion as you observed her?
I don't know that off guard is a good way to describe it. I feel like she was very well prepared by her staff, which listens to the show. And I feel like she sort of knew what she was walking into. As far as her demeanor, she seemed calm and relaxed and pretty chill, very present. Yeah. Very engaged and in the moment.
What were you trying to achieve in speaking with her?
Well, it's very rare that people let us talk to politicians. So anytime we have a chance to have a regular human conversation with them, mm-hmm. that's exciting.
Yeah.
But also in general, we have a few topics that we are reoccurring themes on our show. Self-care, what it's like to be a woman in the workplace, constant police brutality. Those are things we don't ever get a chance to ask politicians about and get real answers from. So it's nice to go into an interview and be like, all right, this is on my terms and these are the kinds of things I want answered.
Okay, it's speculative on your part, but why do you think she chose your show?
Because we're dope.
Yes.
Well, of course. That's not speculative, of course, but what do you think she was trying to achieve?
I think that she wanted a forum where she could, like, showcase herself as human, because as we mentioned in the podcast, there's a big contingent that considers Hillary sort of like robotic and not very warm. And I think that's just a thing about being a politician. You know, you don't seem human after a while. And her camp actually said that they knew that we were not necessarily Team Hillary, quote unquote, in their words. And that's why they wanted to bring her to us, because they wanted us to ask her tough questions and not have a conversation that's just full of like policy and wonk. And stuff like that, you know, just like a real human conversation.
But also,
there's little news in what you're saying there. You have a suspicion that her staff wanted to bring her to you so you would ask her tough questions.
Yes.
That's what they explicitly told us.
That's not suspicion.
So that's great. So you were kind of her prep for the debate tonight.
I guess so.
I like to think so.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting. So her staff's trying to loosen her up, and where do they bring her into the ring with you guys?
Uh-huh. They came to the right place. We started off with bourbon and just went from there.
Yeah, but she didn't have any bourbon.
No, I had her bourbon, though, so it was okay.
What do you think the chances are, though, that in your kind of a format, that candidates feel that they can control their message maybe a little better than they can in the mainstream media, because they can now, I'm really dope with these cool ladies, and look at me, and here are my African-American voter credentials. Not that she needs many. I mean, she's doing pretty well with African-American voters. Mm-hmm. What do you think the potential for her to manipulate you is?
I feel like we held our own.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's true, because the Democratic Party right now needs brown people and young people to vote. So this is a primary interest for her to be on our show. But, I mean, with any politician, any new interaction is a give and take, and we knew going in what we thought her give would be and what her take would be.
Would you talk to any candidate?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump, please call me.
Also, Ben Carson, hit us up.
What would you do with Carson?
Oh, my God.
So many questions.
So many questions. I want to talk about the Popeyes incident.
The Popeyes organization incident? I don't think this man has ever been in a Popeyes, because he called it a Popeyes organization.
Wow. The food place.
Yeah. This is when he was saying all these wild things about what he would have done if he were about to be shot.
Yeah. And then he told a story about when he was in a Popeyes organization. And an armed gunman came in and, like, held a gun on Carson. And he was like, no, I think you want the gentleman behind the register.
That's his plan. Just point to someone else.
He just seems like such a caricature. And I just want
to
be like...
But he's also a very smart man.
Yeah.
Like, he's very accomplished in his field.
See, now that's going to get him. The other stuff you were saying, not going to get him.
Ben, call me.
What do you think podcasts generally, and there are many more than just you... although congratulations for shooting to the top of the charts on BuzzFeed.
Thank you.
What do you think the opportunity is for candidates in maybe picking and choosing between podcasts?
Hmm.
I mean, the talk radio was a huge disruptive force in the 1990s for presidential candidates, that basically they could go to the talk radio host that they liked the best. Fox News, of course, transformed political discourse by being a safe place for the GOP kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is going to happen with the podcast revolution here in this 2016 cycle?
Well, I think that the cool thing about podcasts is that it puts the microphone in the hands of a lot of people who are typically silenced in society, women, people of color, et cetera. And so I think that if there's a candidate who is maybe lacking in votes among Latino women, you know, there's going to be, like, hopefully more in the future, more podcasts for and by Latino women. And I can definitely see, like, a politician being like, okay, we're down in the Latino vote. We need to go find a Latino podcast to go to, you know.
Or they could make their own.
Candidates
can make their own Latino podcasts and call them. I mean, it's a very interesting moment in media. Let's go back to the Hillary interview and listen to a place where you confronted her on a big issue that's in the Obama administration about incarceration and mandatory sentencing. And do you confront Hillary Clinton on this subject?
This is now, I think, got to be a broader conversation than just, you know, change the sentencing and you know, move low-level offenders out of the prisons, because that has to be done, but that's not enough.
Do you think that that answer is a good enough answer for the people of color who are right now in jail because of a very, very broken system?
Look, most of the people who are in jail are there under state law, not federal law.
She dodged the question right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And?
Like a pro.
Yeah. What'd you do?
Nothing. I felt that her answer spoke for itself.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's it was better to just, like, sort of, like, just let the words hang in the air.
Yeah. That, you know, that's what I like to do on this show, is not do the debate thing. When they say what it says is in their heart, let the audience decide.
Mm-hmm.
You know, let the audience see it for what it is. That's great. What was your favorite moment from the Hillary Clinton interview?
Anytime you can get a presidential candidate to admit they're a robot is pretty fun.
Mm-hmm.
And she did that.
She did. She answered all my questions, which I was surprised by. But she admitted that she was built in a garage in Palo Alto.
You guys are the first to realize that I'm really not even a human being. I was constructed in a garage in Palo Alto
this
a very long
a
time
lot.
Ago.
Tell
People think that, you know, Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, they created
it. They don't even know.
Oh, no. I mean, a man whose name shall remain nameless created me in his garage.
Are there more of you?
That was great.
Yeah. And I like that moment, too. It's also one of my favorite moments because it just shows, like, the capacity for, like, something at least resembling fun, that politicians have that. And so it was cool to see her get kind of loose and silly. And I was like, you know, me and Hillary probably have fun at a happy hour laughing and joking about being robots.
All right. You think Hillary will win the debate tonight? Do you think the debate is going to be, you know, as important as your conversation with Hillary Clinton?
I think it'll be entertaining.
I honestly don't.
As far as who's going to win, I don't know. I just hope that she's asked something about our podcast. Like you said on the Another Round podcast
yes.
a couple days ago, blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen, but I will be watching.
Is Bernie next?
It's going to be boring.
You think it's going to be boring?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, you're not the only people to say that.
Yeah.
Would you do Bernie?
Sure.
Don't sound that interested in Bernie Sanders.
I'm not, to be honest.
I don't think he's particularly interesting.
Because?
I don't know. He's just
the lack of interest.
I don't know.
The non-interesting part of him makes him non-interesting. Yeah. It's very podcasty assessment there. Does any Democrat interest you other than Hillary Clinton?
You mean to interview?
Yeah.
Or personally?
Joe B.?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I love Joe Biden.
I wouldn't agree with that, but I would be interested in talking with him.
I love him just like as a guy. He just seems fun. He's also very handsome. Hey, Joe.
Thanks so much for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having
Thank
us.
Thank you.
Tracy Clayton and Heaven Degatu are hosts of Another Round, a podcast from BuzzFeed.
Support for The Takeaway comes from TIAA CREF, a global financial company that's created to serve and built to perform. Learn more at TIAA.org.
So the debate tonight may not be as lively as Hillary Clinton's interview with our previous podcast guests, but it will have a bigger national audience. In Vegas, it will be Hillary Clinton in the center, Bernie Sanders to her right, Martin O'Malley to the left, and Jim Webb and Lincoln Chafee on the flanks. There's apparently a Biden backup scenario as well if something dramatic happens with the vice president's plans in the next few hours. J. Newton Small, political correspondent for Time, says there's no way this debate can match the GOP spectacles. And it's not simply because this is going to be a round of no Trump.
Trump just said that he was going to live tweet the debate. So we may have side entertainment. There were just so many Republicans that they had to split the debate into two. In this case, you get everything all in one because there's only five of them. And because you have to give equal time to everybody, it'll end up being a little bit more hokier, I would imagine, actually, than the Republican debate, which was very sort of kind of a melee of important topics and interesting topics, but particularly because there are so many of them, it kind of ends up being a little bit more easy to direct. Lincoln Chafee, you know, one of his big issues is turning America into the metric system. So I'm sure that will get some time tonight. but I mean, and that's the kind of thing which you're going to have to contend with tonight.
Well, what do you make of the fact that Hillary, as part of her debate prep, Hillary Clinton went before these two African-American podcasters and really, you know, sounded much more engaged and, you know, less like a policy wonk, which is one of the criticisms of Hillary Clinton. How do you think something like that or her behaving like that is going to affect the confrontation that is inevitable between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton in the debate?
Well, the interesting thing about going to sort of African-American podcasters, it's sort of for two reasons why that's interesting. One is she, you know, sounding conversational has always been Hillary Clinton's challenge. And certainly I remember covering, what was it, 36 debates in 2007, 2008. It was just an insane number of debates. And that was the big knock on her, was that she was too much of like a Miss Know-It-All. And she was too sort of wonky and too kind of almost condescending to some degree. And now, you know, that's the last thing she wants, is to be seen as condescending, to be seen as inevitable the way she was in early 2007. And so trying to avoid that, she has to come off as, frankly, a little more low-key, a little friendlier, a little more like relatable, which is another challenge of hers, is being relatable, because she's been in the public eye in national office for more than 30 years. Being inside that bubble, it's not like she's been shopping at Target every weekend. The other one about the podcast that I would say is the choice of two African-American women. So Black Lives Matter is led by African-American women. It will certainly be a topic that you know, will be brought up tonight. It's been a big weakness of Bernie Sanders. I saw him speak in Charleston, South Carolina a couple months ago, or actually about a month ago, and he's not good with African-American audiences. I mean, this is a guy who has not changed his stump speech in like 40 years. And he has these burning moments where he sort of talks about how the evils of Wall Street. And then he would sort of awkwardly stop in the middle of the speech and look down at the podium and pick up his little card, which somebody had filled out for him, and say, "And this is important to the African-American community because," and like, it was just very awkward. So he's trying to really make up. And that's really cost him in a state like South Carolina, where 55% of the electorate is African-American for the Democratic primary. And he was drawing maybe a handful, like maybe three dozen African-Americans in a crowd of 3,500 when I saw him in Charleston. So it's been a major liability for him. And Hillary certainly, I'm sure, will focus on in tonight's debate.
Are we going to see a camera shot to the poker tables in Vegas? And there's Joe Biden sitting there playing around and then sauntering into the debate tonight.
Well, they have an extra stand handy for him, I believe, just in case he decides that he wants to show up. But I think, you know, honestly, Joe Biden, his play for tonight is to watch and see if there's an opportunity. So if Hillary Clinton comes out of this debate incredibly strong with tons of momentum, I mean, it's been a good couple of weeks for her, then there's not a lot of window or opportunity for Joe Biden to step in. But if she comes out really weakened, if there's a surging Bernie Sanders or strangely a surging, you know, Martin O'Malley, then that shows him that there is a place for him, perhaps an opportunity for him to challenge her. But I mean, it's a very tough deadline for him. I mean, he's never been a huge fundraiser. The last campaign he ran, I mean, he really had a problem raising money, finding the donors, finding the grassroots support, finding, I mean, even endorsements at this point. Hillary's kind of sucked all of those up, and there's not a huge bandwidth for a big challenger candidate like Biden. And so there really has to be an opportunity. And I think that's what he wants to judge out of tonight's debate, is if there is an opportunity for him.
Jay Newton-Small is Time Magazine's political correspondent.
The Takeaway is supported by Lumosity.com, brain training designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 60 million people worldwide. With personalized training programs to challenge memory, attention, and problem solving. Learn more at Lumosity.com.
We end this hour with a fantastic voyage through the human body. First stop, the tiny blood vessels called capillaries around the lungs. Look, there you can see it in the blood.
Corpuscles releasing carbon dioxide in return for oxygen coming through on the other side.
Oxygenation.
We've known that it exists, even though we never saw it. But to actually see one of the miracles of the universe...
That scene from a Hollywood movie from the 60s, Fantastic Voyage, all about a miniature microscopic submarine and its crew of doctors trying to heal a brain injury after being injected into the bloodstream. This sci-fi fantasy is a dream come true for Dr. Gavin Francis, whose latest book is his own voyage through the body, using the experiences of his patients as snapshots and the rest, his own powers of description, Adventures in Human Being, a grand tour from the cranium to the calcaneum, takes us to all of the places in us. Miraculous, beautiful, intimidating, and sometimes disgusting. Dr. Francis goes where no one has gone before.
In this book, what I wanted to do was visit the human body, kind of like a travel writer imagines different landscapes through contemporary stories, through the history, through the philosophy and the culture of a different place. And so I really, although the book does start with the brain, and it starts with my time as a trainee neurosurgeon and ends with some training in psychiatry, and moves all the way down after 18 chapters, finally gets to the foot, I really didn't intend to venerate or hold up the brain above any other part of the body, because to me and in my work as a generalist physician, very much a generalist, I really didn't want to privilege any part of the body over another, because they all give us insights into aspects of our humanity.
The things that you see in a hospital of how people have abused their hands, again, one of the most delicate machines on the body, it forms some of the stories that you tell. Do we really understand how precious and fragile our hands are and how much work they do?
Something that often I'm asked about is when you're working in the emergency department or even in the family medicine clinic, do you feel that people who bring injury on themselves in a way are as worthy of medical treatment as people who don't bring it upon themselves? It's a very difficult moral question. I mean, ultimately, none of us really manage to be the kinds of people that we aspire to be. And for example, the chapter on the wrist explores three different stories from the emergency room in this book. The first is a guy who punches through a glass window while going to punch his girlfriend. And I've got to reconstitute all the skin of his forearm. Another is a story of somebody who does slash their wrist through extreme mental anguish. The third is a guy who shoots a nail gun through the palm of his hand and ends up with sort of stigmata on his palm. And I don't see any of those people as more or less deserving, really, of the attention. It's the wonderful thing about aspects of the ethics of medical practice is that we deal with people according to their need rather than according to whether it's necessarily worthy to be treated.
Well, to that point, you deliver an astoundingly empathic account of the story of a man who got part of a ketchup bottle stuck in his rectum after going to a strip club and came into the emergency room.
Yeah.
And in the course of that story, you tell so beautifully how you have to suspend all those kind of moral judgments and that we have such moral judgments about those kinds of places on our body that doctors have to shed to be able to even treat us. How did you find the ability to, first of all, be so empathic, and secondly, to suspend all of the kind of ick qualities that we carry with us about our bodies all the time?
Yeah, in that particular chapter, when I look at him, it's about images, medical images, and how they can be beautiful, and also how beauty does have a place in the consulting room, although that particular case is a story of this getting this x-ray as I was attempting to get this bottle out. And this x-ray to me seemed like some kind of work of art. It was the very organic folded forms of bowel and the bowl of the bones of the pelvis. And then there was this great big kind of man-made object in the middle of it, this factory produced bottle like a skyscraper dropped into a pastoral scene. And at the end of the day, that guy who had that bottle up there, you know, he needed to get it out. And I was going to have to help him get it out.
And even thinking of, you know, places like the bowel and the rectum as just interesting places on the body, not anything to be shunned, is hard for civilians, but you doctors have to do it.
Yeah, I mean, a point that I make in the book is that people often make sort of embarrassed jokes as they get into the position on the couch if I've got to do an examination like that. But at the end of the day, it's something I've got to do. I've found several rectal cancers by putting a glove on and putting my finger in there. So I'm not going to not do it because nobody else is going to find it. I've got to find it.
Do you know this old movie from the 60s, sci-fi movie called Fantastic Voyage?
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
A submarine goes into the body and does this tour through the body. It's all very, you know, the magnificent nerves, the magnificent heart, but it's also a very dangerous place to be inside. Would you say that's, from your experience, sort of the truth, that within beauty lies much peril?
Well, certainly, it's an old joke, isn't it, that medical students, as they go through the different phases of medical school, develop every one of the major illnesses that they're learning about because they get so paranoid. There is a measure of truth in that sometimes the more you know, the more paranoid you can become about your own health, because the more you know can go wrong. But at the end of the day, the body is astonishingly resilient. It's incredible. And it's, to me, a work of astounding wonder. And every day when I'm in the clinic, I journey through it, depending on what symptoms and what problems my patients bring to me. And the privilege of being able to stand witness to those kind of problems in every part of people's lives, from cradle to grave, is quite an extraordinary one. So I certainly wouldn't do any other kind of job than medicine. I feel very fortunate to be doing what I'm doing, and to be able to situate medicine where I believe it should be, which is squarely in the centre of human culture rather than off in some sort of scientific domain, is also a great privilege.
Gavin Francis, thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
Gavin Francis is a physician and the author of Adventures in Human Being, a grand tour from the cranium to the calcaneum, which is out in U.S. bookstores today.
Support for The Takeaway comes from Curious.com, committed to helping people learn more than 17,000 skills like genetics, graphic design, and golf. Curious.com. Grow your skills. Learn more at Curious.com/PRI. The Henry Luce Foundation, for increased understanding of East and Southeast Asia. The Takeaway's resilience reporting is supported by the Rockefeller Foundation. For more, go to rockfound.org.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.